Blog Talk Radio.
It would change your heart, it seemed like, you know. I know this is blood is a little deeper than water and everything, and Ken is run kind of deep and all, but, you know, it was a time when you didn't go for, you know, rough tactics like that, and just because he's your kin, you can't uphold what he's doing.
What about that?
I don't understand him being a great wrestler.
You know, I've had some time to think. And you ought to know probably as well as anybody the things that have happened to me in my life in the past,
what,
year, 6 months, whatever it is. And I think you know that I've done what I could do. But frankly, I finally realized maybe it doesn't do any good. Maybe it's a waste of time. I look at that kid, and you're right. I see an Anderson. I see what it can be. I don't see what somebody else wants me to make it. I see what it can be for me. I can see what it might do for that kid. And if you really stop and think about it, Bolt, if you give it some time and reflect on it, you're looking at me right now. I feel like I'm going back in time. Well, maybe that's what we ought to do. Maybe that's what we got to do. Maybe that's what it has to be. Maybe it's got to go back in time. Because if I look at it honestly, I look at you, and I look at Tommy Rich, and I look at Dusty Rhodes, I look at this Magnum TA, and I realize, all of a sudden, like a light, when I see this kid, all of a sudden I realize, you know what, Ole, you've been a kind of a dummy. You know why? No, wait a minute, you know why? Because, Bolt, frankly, I've been carrying you, I've been carrying Tommy Rich, I've been carrying Dusty Rhodes, I've been carrying all of you, I've been carrying you. I can squat with 700 pounds and all of you together weigh a little bit more, and I'm just finally tired of it. You used to tell me how, don't shake your head.
The people told me, the people said, hey, look, there isn't anything changing. I mean, this is just the trinket before you. You know, this goes way back, way back. I mean, are you gonna be a liar?
No, I don't call a liar. I don't call a liar. I just wake up. No, wait a minute. Let me say something. They talk about, get that camera, and you say you look in a person's eyes, and you can tell whether they're giving you any garbage, BSing you, so they call it.
Yeah.
You take a look, and you're going to see in my eyes, you're going to see the truth. I'm going to just tell you right now, oh, don't worry, I'm not going to touch you, not yet. I'm going to tell you this. Today is a free day. Today is the day that you and I look at each other and I admit, nice guy that you were, whatever. But I help you, you can't deny it. The days are over. I'm leaving. Next time I see you, I would suggest maybe you watch out.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And we have our other co-host on the line, Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Ole Anderson dead or something?
No, it's just it's pretty much from that time period, since we are going to be talking about Georgia Championship Wrestling, and Ole Anderson was part of the match. So I threw that in there. Plus, I didn't have time to go and find I was thinking about putting one of the Omni commercials, but I didn't have time to go and find and record it.
Oh, okay. I thought you died or something.
No, not yet. But we are going
fall.
To... The what?
Probably in a 2-4-0.
Probably. He's in pretty rough shape from what I understand. But anyway, we are going to be talking about something that is 33 years in the making. And it's something that me and probably a lot of other people my age who were watching Georgia Championship Wrestling thought we would never see. And somehow, I guess there were rumors that Boris Zukov had a copy of this match, but it just never came out. And then all of a sudden, out of the fucking blue, the WWE decides to come out with like a special subject, subtopic, and called Hidden Gems. And somehow, some way, they found, after 33 years of nobody knowing it existed, a copy of the Last Battle of Atlanta. And if you don't know what the Last Battle of Atlanta is...
They found it by accident, I believe. I think they found it by accident.
Yeah, I guess that's the only way you could find it, because apparently people have been looking for it for years. Every tape trader who was around in the 80s and 90s was looking for a copy of this and were unable to find. Dave Meltzer probably has never seen this match until it was released, and all the tape traders sent him everything. Well, basically what the Last Battle of Atlanta is around 1981, the hottest babyface in all pro wrestling was one Tommy Wildfire Rich, and the biggest heel in wrestling was the Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer. And some people today would be like, why would they be the biggest babyface in heels? Well, they were the stars of Georgia Championship Wrestling, which at the time had some of the biggest reach because it was on the WTBS, not TBS, it was on WTBS back in the day at 5:05, and it was national cable. The first Saturday that I had cable, I discovered wrestling, and that's what I discovered was Georgia Championship Wrestler, and the first wrestler I saw was Tommy Rich. And these two dudes got into a bloody feud that just they poured blood wherever they went. They took this fight everywhere. They even came to San Antonio and brought it here to the Hemisphere Arena. And these two dudes just fucking beat the shit out of each other, bloodied each other up. They drank a bunch of beer and took a bunch of aspirin before their matches, and they tore into each other. And finally, after 2 years, they decided they were going to have one last match. It was going to be at the Omni in Atlanta, which was for people like me who were watching wrestling in the late 70s, 80s, the Omni was bigger than Madison Square Garden, because every week you heard that goddamn commercial at the Omni. Oh, you know, you hear all these big names and big matches, because at the time the biggest match you'd get would be the Road Warriors against Mike Jackson and whoever he was teaming with, because they didn't give you good matches back then. And they had this match. It's going to be on a cage. It was going to be an enclosed cage, which means basically it was a forerunner to Hell in the Cell. And they finally had a match, no referee. Just they were going to go in there. They're going to have a winner, and that was going to be it. They're going to go their separate ways, and I believe they actually did. As far as fighting each other, they ended up teaming not too long after to take on the Road Warriors. But they had this last match. Tommy Rich won. They never showed anything from the Omni except maybe clips. So this match never came out. And then, like I said, lo and behold, the WWE is putting out the Last Battle of Atlanta. And I watched it, and I have my opinions. But since I've been watching wrestling longer than both of you guys, I guess Katrina's second and then Craig. So, Craig, since you're the newer one, I'll let you start off. And have you even seen it yet? Please tell me you have.
Yeah, of course I did. When you said we were going to talk about it, I went and watched it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm surprised you didn't go and watch it before. But since you were the newer person to it, you probably have less of a backstory, everything. I want to get your opinion. You heard all this hype. Did it live up to the hype? What are your thoughts? I'll let you just start off and talk about the match and your opinion and your thoughts.
Okay. Clearing my throat because I have a few things to say. First off, as you said, I did not see this. Of course, nobody else did either, except for a few, few thousand fans that were in the Omni. When it was announced, I was like, okay, what's all the hype about? Because living up here in the upper left-hand corner of the States, we didn't get Georgia Championship Wrestling. And so, when I finally did some research on it, I found out, again, it was against Tommy Wildfire Rich and the other man being Buzz Sawyer. Know both the names, seen them work. Can't say that I've ever seen them work each other. I did not know the backstory on all of this. I don't know what brought them to this point. I did not know how Paul Ellering fit in. I did understand later, as I watched it, that Paul Ellering was the manager of Buzz Sawyer. Paul Ellering was suspended from a smaller cage on top of the cage with the roof, and obviously to keep him from interfering. Now, the deal was if Tommy Wildfire Rich won, he, excuse me, Ole Anderson got to wrestle him in the same cage. Just being completely 100% honest. Just throwing it out there. This match was nothing special. Don't get upset.
The idea of the match is more special than the match itself.
The wrestling match that I was watching turned into a fight. And it was a fight. They hit each other really hard. They threw each other into the cage. I think I counted maybe two wrestling moves in the whole match, one of them being a pile driver. It was a fight. Tommy Rich, I looked at the counter. He was bleeding 7 minutes in, and that was including the entrances. Bleeding immediately. Of course, he's got the bleach blonde hair and the blood streaming from his head on the bleach blonde hair is something to behold. That makes it look very, very violent. And then not to be outdone, Buzz Sawyer gets color as well, and he is a bloody mess. And like I said, nothing special. They threw a lot of punches. They threw a lot of whips into the cage. There was this, that, and the other thing. And in the end, really from out of nowhere, it was a desperation move by Tommy Rich where he grabs Buzz Sawyer's middle section. He falls, but as he's falling, he throws Buzz Sawyer into the cage with all his might. Buzz Sawyer hits one of the support beams in the cage. That is key because it knocked him out for 3 seconds. And Tommy Wildfire Rich covered Buzz Sawyer, and 1, 2, 3, and it's over. And then things really start to heat up. They lower the cage. In comes Paul Ellering, and here comes Ole Anderson, whose jeans were already ripped. I don't know what happened, but he beat the fire out of Paul Ellering, bloodied him up, and he beat him as well. As I said, I didn't think the thing was anything special. Of course, not knowing any of the backstory, not seeing them wrestle, I have to be fair, not seeing them wrestle, not knowing the backstory, and then knowing that it was that long ago and the styles have changed drastically since then, it wasn't anything special, but it was a spectacle. And for historic purposes, mostly, I think it's a good thing to put in your wrestling journal. You know what I mean? It needs to be seen because it's, as Ed stated, it is very important. So it's cool.
Thank you, Trey. Your thoughts on everything?
Well, first I was confused about what the rules of this match were because they would both go down and the announcer would start, you know, the ring announcer would start counting, like 1, 3,
right.
3, 4. I don't know if this is like last man standing, but then all of a sudden Tommy Rich goes down on top of him, and the ring announcer goes 1, 2, 3, like he's the referee, and it's over. So I was kind of confused there because I don't know if anybody else was. I wasn't too sure what the rules were of the match. I know there wasn't a referee in the ring. The first time I ever
it
heard
was
it,
almost
ring announcer.
It was almost like the. It was almost like the announcer was the ref.
Yeah.
You know, somebody get knocked down, he would do the counting. If there was a cover made, he would do the counting over the house mic. It was very strange. No ref in the ring.
Yeah. And I kind of thought the Ellering being in the cage was kind of ridiculous considering they had a cage at the top on it. So.
Yeah.
You know, so but I guess I just
It was maybe about 6 inches away from the cage. So it's like they almost pretty much could have put him on top of the cage.
Yeah. And he's an Ole Anderson. They damn near had a longer match than Buzz Sawyer and Tommy Rich did, I think.
Right.
I thought that kind of, you know, took away from it a little bit because they had this big match after the match. And, you know, the whole focus should have been on that match, but that's just a little thing. But, yeah,
well, the promoter has to get, you know, make data shine in there.
Yeah, I guess so. As far as bleeding goes, I mean, my God. I mean, Tony Richie, he always bled to where it looked like he was about to pass away. Mm-hmm. Especially when he would do those angles where he's wearing a suit. Did you ever see one of those?
Yeah.
Like the Tony Richie Eddie Gilbert angle in Memphis when he got busted open. He looked like he was damn near if he was going to pass away. Bud Sawyer, head was just covered in blood. Yeah, it was the legends of the match. The match didn't live up to the legend to me, but I don't think any kind of match would. It's just because it's been hyped so long and talked about. So I think the only picture I saw was one picture in an after mag when I started getting those of the match. Because I noticed that the cage had a top on it because I thought that was so cool that I'd never seen a cage with a top on it. I think they just found it it was a tape labeled like the Omni or something. Somebody watched it and it was on there. It's like just out of the blue somebody found it. I don't know, maybe hopefully they find that. I think the next thing you need to find is that Tom McGee and Bret Hart match that we heard about for years. When you remember, know the match I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where they said that Tom McGee looked like $1 million, and like in this one match, it was all because of Bret Hart and convinced Vince he was going to be a big star. Then he saw his other matches and it sucked. So,
I think Dave's actually seen that match for some reason.
They got it somewhere. But,
yeah.
But yeah, it was a big match, and I enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was good.
Well, as far as, like, living up to the hype, because we didn't see it, you know, that adds to it because everyone saw the matches or the clips or the footage during the day, and these dudes were nearly killing each other, and then you have what was the last one, and you just know that Tommy won, but you never saw it, so... In your mind, in your fantasy, you're basically realizing, thinking that basically the only way Tommy won is he pulled out a gun and shot him in the ring or some crazy shit like that. You know what I mean? So, that didn't happen. But, you know, it's not like that was going to happen. But just people's minds get carried away and they fantasize about what could have happened in this match. I posted the other day on Twitter and my Facebook, it's not the whole match, but it's the match they had here in San Antonio. And as a match, it might even be better than this one, than the last Battle of Atlanta. But, I mean, just for historical reasons, I mean, just because you had to wait so damn long, it's such a legendary match because no one had seen it up until that time. And, you know, as Craig says, it's kind of like a regular match. Well, it's if you weren't around back in the 80s, it's going to be a regular match because there's no high spots. The furthest they did was jump off the second rope because the cage wasn't high enough to where they could jump off the top rope. You know, there's no high spots, nothing super crazy. It was basically two dudes using their fist. I think when the match started, I think it took all of 30 seconds for Tommy Rich to start bleeding. I mean, he was bleeding fast. And, if you look at interview clips from Buzz Sawyer from that time period, his forehead was a mess. I mean, he would have like a square thing of tape in the very middle and then like all around you'd see all the other scar tissue. And I mean, his forehead was a fucking mess. And he 2 years before didn't have a mark on him. I mean, all that was from basically that time period where he just blew up as a top heel on Georgia Championship Wrestling. And so there's no way the match could have lived up to the hype if unless one of them died, basically, in the match. But, you know, that didn't happen. But, I mean, like I say, Tommy Rich is the first wrestler I saw. To me, I mean, I loved the match. I thought it was, you know, it's not the greatest match I ever saw, but I loved it because they told a great story in the match. And the selling in this match, you know, Brian's always crying about, oh, I want to see somebody sell. That's all this match was. This match was all just fucking selling. Tommy Rich selling that he's being on the death's door from all the blood loss. And the Mad Dog selling, too. I mean, I thought that part of the match was great. I mean, you just don't see that anymore. You know, nowadays kids want to see all these guys do all these flippy-doos And that's cool, but what really got me into wrestling was the story and the selling and everything that went around it. So, you know, not the greatest match in the world, but I loved it. I mean, I was watching it as an 11-year-old when I did watch it, and I just thought it was fantastic.
At the end, it was like, it wasn't just a move that ended the match. It was like both dudes are exhausted and one dude happened to land on top, you know? So
my mom had come to visit while I was watching this match, so she starts kind of watching it, and then at the very end, she's like, you know, he won, but the other guy seems more alive.
That's true.
After the match. And then you got to watch Ole Anderson beat the shit out of Paul Ellering for forever. There was like maybe 30 seconds of heat after like a low blow, but basically it was just Ole beating the shit out of Ellering with torn pants that gradually got more torn and then tore on both sides. I don't know what the fuck that was all about. But yeah, Ole the promoter had to get, you know, make part of it about him, so he got in there and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't think it was supposed to be in the cage. I think he just ran in there before they tore it down, because you could kind of tell they're getting ready to tear the cage down. But, you know, Paul gets in there
to
check on Buzz Sawyer, and then Ole gets in there.
They were telling the fans to be careful of the cage over the ring light after the match,
yeah.
Like they were fixing to take it down. So,
I got one question, though, because I didn't hook up my computer to my TV. I was just so excited I just watched it on my computer. Who was it that interfered at the very end? Was it? It almost looked like Terry Funk, but I don't think it was Terry Funk. Maybe Dick Slater.
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. But anyway, somebody after Ole wins, someone runs in there and jumps in, and then he starts beating up Ole, and they beat up Ole, and then while they're trying to get out, people are like literally trying to attack him. Like you literally see the cops having to get in front of people and holding them back because there was so much heat that these fans just wanted to get after whoever attacked Ole at the end and stuff. So just totally different crowd than what you see today. You know what I mean? You might see a knucklehead try and jump in the ring just for attention, whereas back then they wanted to kill somebody if they got their hands on them.
Didn't somebody jump in the ring a couple weeks ago on Raw or something?
Yeah.
I was doing a promo because I didn't actually see it on the show, but you could tell somebody jumped in the ring. Seth Rollins was kind of, I think it was Seth Rollins, he just kind of had this look on his face, and you could tell somebody was in there.
Yep, totally. Somebody jumped in there as Rollins was doing his promo, and he stood in front of him. It looked like he had like a hard hat on. And they quickly cut away, and next thing you know, the guy's out of the ring, and Seth's pretty much rattled, but continues to do his promo.
I remember the guy. I remember it was a few years after that. You remember that legendary Flair and Jimmy Garvin cage match where the fans scaled the cage at the Great American Bash, like 1987.
Yeah.
Like Jimmy was in the figure four and Ronnie Garvin's ringside. All of a sudden, he looks up and yells, "Hey!" And there's this guy. He has scaled the cage. He's down there halfway over, and they pull it back down. Awesome.
Yeah, they took wrestling a little more seriously back in the day than they do today. Mm.
Just as much.
Took it more seriously, and they were a lot dumber. In some respects, people are dumber now.
Well, they're dumber now because, you know, the point is they're trying to just get attention, and they're going to either get beat up or arrested for doing that. Where people back then weren't trying to get attention. They literally wanted to get revenge upon these guys.
Yeah. At the Great American Bash 85, when after the Flair and Nikita match, when Harold was in there and wasted like Nikita, he wasn't doing that for attention. He was doing that. Hated that motherfucker. He wanted to kill him.
Or when Ole went the heel again and they beat up Dusty Rhodes. I mean, those fans really wanted to get in that cage big time.
They couldn't get out of the fucking ring. That's perfect.
Yeah, they're like, fuck that, we're staying here, we're safe.
I bet it took over 30 minutes to get that cage up for the Rich and Sawyer match. They had to, not only do the regular cage, but they had to, that's why some of the lesser, like some of the shows wouldn't end with like a world title match to be the cage match because, you know, they had to put that thing up and they couldn't really do it in the middle of the show because it takes too long to put it up and then take it down. So, and this wasn't so technical back then. They weren't suspending above the ring or anything, so.
Yeah, it didn't come down mechanically into, like, poles that held it. Remember when Seth almost got impaled by the fourth thing that won that? But, it must have took them forever because it looked like almost like a real fence out of your backyard with just a roof on it.
Yeah.
Wasn't as bad as those wooden cages, like in Mid-South or Smoky Mountain. It looked like you built it, like in an afternoon or something in your backyard.
Yeah. Those cages were ridiculous.
Those things
Smoky Mountain
were like
they were
about to fall in. I mean, they would, like, a fantastic do a spot off the top of it. And you better be careful when you're shaking like a motherfucker.
I'm surprised in those matches, like, when they never really threw each other into the barbed wire. They always did it to the wood. I'm surprised the wood didn't break on one of those and the guy goes flying out.
Yeah.
But basically what was weird is because this was, like I said, for 2 years, this was the hottest feud in all the wrestling. You know, wherever they took it, they sold it out.
As big, but you know, the most famous ones of the 80s, this is like up there with like Von Erichs and Freebirds, I think.
It's right there. I mean, it was a big feud until the Von Erich Freebirds.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's like not long after this feud. Well, see, this is when basically the Road Warriors had come out. And like I said, after this match, they did an angle where Buzz Sawyer was still bad, but he had a younger brother named Britt Wayne. Wrestled under Britt Wayne and then became Britt Wayne Sawyer. He mainly wrestled up in Craig's area before Georgia. And the Road Warriors went and beat the shit out of him up so bad because he was kind of a little dude. And Buzz, finally, you know, he couldn't take seeing his little brother, so he was going to get revenge. And the brother was too beat up to tag with him, so they had the dream tag match of Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer go against the Road Warriors. And,
actually, the first turn was like a couple weeks later when Britt Sawyer had a match with, I think, Jake Roberts, like the national heavyweight champion or something. And Paul Ellering was in the corner and Buzz was out there because they didn't know that was his brother yet, kind of a secret. And cause they had talked about how Ole and Gordon Sully had went to visit Brett Wayne's mother or something. They said he had another son that's kind of the black sheep of the family, but they didn't name him. And Buzz was out there, and then Ellering started interfering. So then, you know, that's where the turn happened. I think Britt Wayne won the match in the national title in that match. So that was actually when he first turned after this match.
Yeah. And then, like I said, it led to Tommy and Buzz teaming. And then after that, I don't know, I guess because it was like the Road Warriors had got there and then slowly – you know, Kerry got real popular. Basically, all the steroid guys started getting popular. And Tommy Rich, you might look at him today and be like, how the fuck was this fucking skinny, fat dude the hottest baby face? Because he don't really have a body. He looks like a normal dude. And I think that's what hurt Tommy is. I mean, you know, he never really took care of himself. I mean, he was in good wrestling shape.
He was all about drinking a case of beer and shit like that. You know, he's a beer-drinking redneck.
Yeah, he didn't take no steroids. And Buzz had a little build to him, but he was not a big dude. And so slowly the steroid guys started getting popularity, and the two of them kind of, I don't want to say they disappeared because Tommy stuck around for, you know, he still did a lot of good angles in Memphis, and he left Georgia for a while, came back. I mean, he still did stuff, but it's just, they just were not at the level they once were. It's just like they were the biggest draws in wrestling, and then they were just two dudes, two other wrestlers. And
the funny thing to live off that, try to live off that reputation is that when you get that really short run as the NWA champion for a few days, and that was kind of his peak, I guess, as a star, along with the Sawyer feud. I think he kind of rode on that reputation for a little while and just kept going with it and didn't do much later on. So.
Yeah, and as he got older, he got heavier, and even his body even got less attractive as far as, like I say, in 81, 83, he was the biggest babyface, but, Vince McMahon or Hunter looks at him from today's eyes, and they wouldn't even give him a chance. He wouldn't even give him a chance. You know what I mean?
Uh-uh.
And so...
Even the Foundation couldn't even clean him up. So.
And then, Buzz went to Mid-South and World Class, and he was still good, but it was never the same. And then he ends up getting, I guess, killed in a drug deal gone wrong.
No, he died in his front yard. He OD'd.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, after
he
stole
Undertaker's
money. Yeah, oh, yeah,
I think Dino
right.
Bravo, I
he,
think.
Yeah, after, he OD'd after he stole the Undertaker's money and
yeah.
Shit. Because Undertaker went to him to go learn how to wrestle or whatever, and he just took his money and shit and probably spent it on drugs. But, he was gone. And then, like I say, Tommy's been around and kind of, the longer he stayed around, I guess the worse it really was because, he became less and less of what he was. Basically he was the Don and the FBI.
Not Tommy, but Sawyer was later on. I thought he was a much better wrestler than Tommy Rich, athlete and stuff like that.
Well, he was a really good wrestler, but when he went heel and became the Mad Dog, he just became like a brawler. Like he was before he, because he used to have like a bushy hair, and he would wrestle a lot. And then like in the feud or whatever, I guess he lost it in the hair match or whatever. I can't remember exactly what happened, but. After that, he just went crazy and just became like a brawler. But he was actually a really good wrestler.
And he was a great bump taker. He'd take those bumps like he could hit with a drop kick and he'd dive out of the ring head first and shit. Doing those wild bumps and stuff like that.
Did you ever see his real short run in the WWF where he was Bulldog Buzz Sawyer?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it. I think it was like 85 or 84 or something.
Yeah.
And Vince was getting everybody.
I just remember my mom would come in the room and she's like, that guy's about to have a heart attack and die. You hear the way he's breathing? He's not supposed to be breathing like that.
I think he lasted about as long as the Freebirds and the Missing Link in WWF back then.
I think he lasted just a little longer than the Freebirds. I saw a couple TV matches where the Freebirds only had like that one and stuff.
I just remember the Freebirds because they came out with Dave Wolf and one time came out with Cyndi Lauper. They were doing the tag team rock and wrestling thing back then. That was the whole deal with them. And they didn't like it. They were too crazy for WWF at the time. So.
Yeah, and that's saying something because, the WWE had a lot of cokeheads and crazy dudes. Back then, they just weren't crazy enough for the Freebirds. But, yeah, it was cool. I mean, I'm glad that whoever found it. I mean, because, finally get to see something that's like a major part of wrestling history and stuff.
That feature, the Hidden Gems thing on there, that's a really cool new thing they got. I hope that they can continue to put stuff up on there. I would love to see like some of the Steamboat Flair cage matches from back in the day that they did in WWE. Stuff like that. I mean, that stuff would be amazing to see. The thing that I've been wanting to see for the longest time, I went to a house show. I was probably 15, 16, and it was the Bulldogs against the Hart Foundation in a cage match. They did Double Juice on a house show with Brett and Davey Boy. Man, this match was phenomenal. If I could get my hands on a copy of one of their cage matches that they did on the run,
I would be very, very happy. It was just tremendous.
Back in the 80s, juice on a house show was not a rare occurrence. You see that a lot in Georgia or Memphis or anywhere, basically.
Well,
there was a
lot
of
juice.
We're
talking about WWF.
Yeah, that's true.
Talking about WWF.
I mean, they would do it occasionally, like in the like you'd watch those half shows, like they were on MSG or something, or from Spectrum. You would see it more so like in cage matches, like the Craig is saying, but you know.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I could figure is that they had they might have had family in the audience because they were so close to Vancouver, you know, Canada and all that, you know. They were so close to home that maybe mm-hmm. they had some family here. I don't know. That's the only thing.
They come out of like Stampede in Japan, you know, where they wrestle real hard. So
Yeah, surprising to do that.
So
what I'm really hoping they find, since they're finding shit that supposedly doesn't exist, is I'm hoping they find a cage match with Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood versus Sergeant Slaughter and Corporal Don Coryell.
It's on YouTube, the whole thing. The whole show.
Not the whole match, though.
Yeah, it's the whole match. The show with commentary and stuff is on YouTube.
Oh, I'm probably have you guys probably send me a link. I don't think I've ever seen that one. I know a lot of the build-ups.
I think I have a playlist up on my YouTube channel called Final Conflict where it has the match. And it actually shows some of the other matches from the show. I think David Crockett was the announcer or something.
Hmm. Wow. Cool. Hopefully they'll have,
That was the other match that was the most, like, talked about and looked for, like, for years. You know, so. That's where I need to get a job is in that archive. They let me get in there. I find a bunch of shit. I get fired for making myself DVDs every day or something like that, but oh well.
Right, I mean, like I say, they got like 130-something thousand hours. There's got to be all kinds of fucking shit that's on there.
135,000 hours, and I binge watched Holy Foley the other day.
I can't blame you for that. Noel's pretty fucking hot.
He's got a hot daughter and three dumpy-looking sons.
And a future and a future dumb psychopathic son-in-law, I guess.
The best thing with the first episode, she says that she talks about how she announces at the dinner table she wants to be a WWE superstar. And then the doorbell rings, and the boyfriend is there with this clown wig and makeup on. And while he's standing there, he's got the dog in one arm. He just looks at him. He's like, Lord. It was so good.
It's so fucking contrived, but fucking so funny at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous, but I don't know. That's fine.
That girl is so smoking hot. My son, who is 10, sees the commercial. This is a couple weeks ago. And he goes, hey, is Mick Foley's wife really, is she really pretty? I'm like, well, yeah, she's pretty. So why do you ask? And Cameron goes, well, I just figured she had to be pretty because that girl is really pretty too. That's a good kid right there. He knows what's going on.
Well, I remember first time seeing her was at Beyond the Mat in the crowd. Now I feel like a pervert if I say she's really attractive.
Yeah. I got a photo with her in San Jose for that Mania weekend.
Okay.
She's taller than me.
Wow.
He goes to his first day of work and as a writing assistant, which I think is total bullshit. That's just what they made up for that show.
Right.
But he introduces himself and he sees Mick Foley's son and this goober in the next cubicle says, look, I got his doll over here. Like, okay, weirdo. Then Foley shows up at work and, like, embarrasses him and gets him to leave.
One thing I'm hoping this Hidden Gems thing is kind of will lead up to, because it seems like a lot of people are talking about it and going to watch it, and hopefully they'll see that there is a market for this older shit and fucking start releasing more World Class and more Mid-South and more Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed on YouTube, like, one of the channels that subscribed to, somebody's been uploading, like, Georgia Championship Wrestling from, like, 1980. On there, so.
And then I had posted a couple links that were like kind of build up to the Battle of Atlanta, and I forgot that Ole could be a surly bastard when he was talking to some of these heels and kind of be a dick.
Yeah, go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Katrier, and I've got like the pre-match and all the post-match stuff from that last Battle of Atlanta and some of that stuff on the Georgia Championship Wrestling playlist up there. Anybody wants to check that out. So.
The way he fucked with Paul Ellering about, they'd only give him like a hint. Like every week it was just a hint more of what was going to happen to your ass. That's the thing. And
yeah.
they waited forever before they actually told him that it was going to be Ole and shit. So if you look at the build, half of the build up to the last Battle of Atlanta was fucking Ole and Paul, because they were probably the better interviews of the four.
You know, looking back, because the only Paul Ellering I saw really when I started watching was Road Warriors, where he'd just stand outside with the Wall Street Journal and do basically nothing for the entire match. And
I actually got to see Paul Ellering as a babyface in it was either Mid-South or Georgia, I can't remember which one, but basically it was when the Iron Sheik was doing his clubs gimmick.
Yeah.
Where you swing the clubs over the back of your head. And Paul Ellering took the challenge, and he was doing it, and he was about to beat the Iron Sheik's thing, and then the Iron Sheik attacked him and beat him up and shit.
Yeah, I was going to say that seeing him as the manager for Road Wars and doing nothing for so long, it's like, he was a really great manager back then when he was managing them and, like, Buzz Sawyer and Jake the Snake and all those guys.
Well, he was a shoe manager. He fucking did all the shit for them outside of the ring, for real.
Well, I don't know about the other guys. I know he did for the Road Warriors. I'm not sure about the other fella, like Jake Robertson, Buzz Sawyer, and stuff like that.
And then what's funny is, like, okay, they had, like, the dream team of Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer, but they didn't – I'm sure they probably won the matches by disqualification or whatever, but they didn't win the title. And not that long after, the team that finally beats the Road Warriors for the title is freaking King Kong Bundy and the Masked Superstar.
Yep.
Oh, we got 15 minutes left, so I guess we could run down Backlash real quick if you want.
You all watching USA this weekend?
I'm not.
Meaning
the what?
UFC, CM Punk's debut.
I'm going to watch it, but I ain't paying for it.
Okay.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, it doesn't make me a bad person that I want to watch CM Punk just get the shit beat out of him.
Yeah.
I would say that's going to be a fight that it's probably going to be one of those just kind of boring ones that goes the distance and it's a, you know, they got to go to the judge's decision or something.
I'd be very disappointed if that's what happens. I'm pretty much expecting him to get blitzed in like 20 seconds.
Yeah, I'm expecting him to get knocked out for sure. I mean, just
I'm kind of disappointed.
He has to come back to wrestling.
There you go.
I'm actually disappointed Brian hasn't watched those videos so he can fucking go on, because you know how he's Mr. Jiu-Jitsu. He could go on about how when he subbed that guy out, he had his legs crossed and he only had one arm around the guy's neck. It was like a one-arm fucking rear naked and stuff. You can hear Mr. Brian go on and on about it, even though CM Punk probably beat the shit out of Brian in a jiu-jitsu match.
No. Very possible. Okay, so Backlash this weekend. I'll be completely honest with you, as I always am. I have yet to see a SmackDown since they split brands.
Oh, really? I've watched it every week.
It's not been
the greatest show in the world, but I mean, it's why I so I've watched it, because I didn't know what was going to happen beforehand. So.
Yeah,
well,
I'm always on my way to Brian's. I'm always on my way to Brian's when the show's on, or it's on as I'm getting ready to leave. And
mm-hmm.
So then the next thing you know, you have, like five of them on your DVR, and then I almost feel like stressed out that I haven't watched it. You know what I mean? What am I going to do? You know.
Then you go and watch a segment like the old day with on Monday, and you don't want to watch anything.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ! Whoever wrote that should be fired. My God.
That I said it on Twitter. That half hour of Raw might have been the worst half hour of any wrestling program ever. Because they followed that up with the Darren Young stuff, and
there's
it was
nobody cares about.
Horrendous. Exactly. And then
you know
only
what's
to follow
coming,
it
though,
up
right?
Again, only to follow it up again with that stupid promo by Sasha Banks.
Yeah.
Gosh, that was horrible.
You know what they're going to follow the old day segment up with, right?
Some kind of a doctor thing from next week.
Hopefully a loser leave town match.
No, it's going to be fucking Doc and Anderson and Dana coming out in blackface and blue.
No,
and unicorn
you're
home.
Out of your mind. You're out of your mind.
Hey, no one went all crazy when X-Pac and Road Dogg and Billy Gunn and them went all blackface.
Maybe because nobody gave a shit back then.
Anyway, well,
they were in
the
real war back then. They were doing anything and everything they could.
Well, they need to save this shit.
Hopefully, it's a legally
sound
match and it ends in a double pin. Everybody leaves.
Oh, and the other week I was talking about how Dana's getting fat. Well, apparently WWE thinks she's getting fat too, because now they're calling her Miss Piggy.
Well, she does resemble.
So I guess if she pisses them off really bad, we're going to get another Mickie James segment like that when they got mad at her for getting fat, even though she was nowhere close to being as fat as Dana.
She's horrible.
She has presence. And she has charisma. But she
Well, she should give them back.
She's the worst wrestler ever. And like I say, she's hot and ugly at the same time. I don't know how that's possible, but she does it.
She just, whatever she wears is just not very flattering. Makes her look like an ugly chick or something.
Exactly.
Not that I would, I'd throw a hump into her, I ain't gonna lie, but still.
What I find really stupid is you bring in Bayley, she gets over, she's been over. Every time she's come out, everyone's excited for her, but forget that. Let's put her on the back burner. Let's get a title match to Sasha. It's like, and then have her do that.
And have her beat her on the same show, which is stupid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Bayley beat Charlotte on the same show, but then they announced fucking Sasha versus Charlotte at the fucking pay-per-view.
I mean, Bayley, they should have been doing another, underdog storyline with her when she came up, really, leading to, WrestleMania or something next year.
No, they would have done it too long, and they would have kept beating. They would have kept beating her too long, and then they would have just killed. They would have sorrowed her. So I'm actually kind of glad they got her winning, because they can't do the underdog right. But the thing with Sasha, it wouldn't be that bad if she was a fucking heel, but she is the worst fucking babyface who ever fucking lived. She just cannot be a fucking babyface and cut a promo. It's just ridiculous. She's horrible. She's the worst babyface fucking promo out there. And she wouldn't be half bad if she was a heel. But because the people chant Sasha, They only give a shit about her when she's not even wrestling. They never fucking chant for her when she's actually doing something in the ring. It's just when she's not there. It's like, so let's make her babyface. It's like she's not a fucking babyface. There's nothing about her fucking character that's a fucking babyface.
I have to agree. Okay, so 10 minutes left, guys. Let's run down
okay,
the pay-per-view real quick. Okay, in no particular order. They only have 5 matches listed. I don't know if they're adding something or what, because, like I said, I have not seen the show. We have an Intercontinental Championship. The Miz, he's going to be wrestling Dolph Ziggler.
At least Maurice will be out there. That's the only good thing. Well, no, actually, Miz has been awesome since he went to SmackDown, honestly. But Ziggler, I don't want to watch Ziggler.
It'd be a good match, but still, you know, it's hard to care about Dolph Ziggler at this point.
Right, exactly. We have Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt. Interesting matchup.
It should be pretty good.
I don't know if they'll do, like, a real finish here. I think they'll probably build something else, like, for next month or something. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Unfortunately, American Alpha is hurt. Well, Chad Gable's hurt. So we get this. The Usos and the Hype Bros versus Heath Slater and Rhino.
The Usos are going to face the Hype Bros and then face the winner. And the Rhino and Slater face the champions. So
okay. So the Usos are wrestling the Hype Bros.
I've actually loved every single thing they've been doing with Slater, so I'm actually looking forward to this probably more than anything except for AJ.
So because American Alpha got hurt, that automatically put Slater and Rhino into the finals?
No, they earned their spot to the finals.
They were already into the finals. They beat the Hype Bros. And then the Usos hurt American Alpha when the Usos got beat. But
okay.
American Alpha's out. So that put the Hype Bros and Usos, they got to do another match to see who goes to the finals. So,
I see.
That's the deal.
Okay, that makes sense. And
I think what will happen, they'll either have the – I think the Usos will go to the finals and either the Usos will win or the either Slater or Rhino will win, like maybe American Alpha costs the Usos the match, and that's how Heath gets his contract. Or he'll just lose, but they'll say, well, you gave a good shot, here's your contract anyway, like he walks the other stupid shit on the shows. So,
I hope they don't do that.
You know, hopefully he gets to, you know, he's got a son without a tongue, so he needs to make some money for him.
Daughter doesn't have a tongue.
Daughter,
I love the one daughter who just didn't want to have nothing to do with him.
That's got to be from the family from the Randy Quaid character from Vacation. Didn't he have a kid without a tongue?
Yeah, there was. One of them didn't have a tongue.
I swear that's where that has to be where they got that from.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And then the wife saw hitting on Rhino and rubbing up on Rhino, and Rhino just got this look on his face like, get this bitch away from me. And then, like, one daughter is all, like, happy and is just happy, excited to be there. And then the one that just was like, don't touch me. Get the fuck away from me. She was awesome. The Heath Slater shit's been the best shit on fucking either brand the last couple weeks.
There's a line on Christmas Vacation. Grandma's looking at, I can't remember the kid's name, but he's looking at the little girl and, oh, my gosh, her eyes. And Randy Quaid goes, yeah, she falls down a well, eyes go cross, gets kicked by a mule, back to the other way.
I still never got over that scene where they forgot to untie the dog from the bumper. Always got me for them all. Just thinking about that dog being drunk in the fucking road.
This is listed as second to the top on the show, so don't yell at me. It says the SmackDown Women's Championship. It's a 6-pack challenge.
Well, it should be second from the top. It's important.
Okay.
Women's title claim.
Okay. Fine.
So it doesn't have any women I care about on it.
It has Alexa Bliss. What more do you fucking need?
I think Rebecca Knox. What's her name? What's that chick's name?
Which one? Becky?
Yes, Becky Lynch.
Carmella? Oh, Becky
Lynch. She's kind of on it too. But anyway, I like Becky's work. I just wish she could figure out how to run the ropes after years and years and years in this business. Anyway, and your main event.
By you now. You just throw it off.
I'm just saying.
But you did endear yourself to the peach machine, so that's okay.
Well, anyway, the main event
for some reason, I don't know why.
I think she's hot, and I watched her a couple times up here when she came down for Pinnacle, and got a soft spot in my heart for her because she works hard. But anyway.
Nikki's just coming back, and she's had the shit kicked out of her for like a month, so she probably went.
Yeah. Okay, so your main event, of course, is Dean Ambrose. I don't know what's the matter with Dean lately, but he's going to be wrestling AJ Styles. I'm sure it'll be a great show, or a great match.
And I think they should just go in and put the title on AJ.
Dean's
just
got a world
champion to me. I don't know. He's
the best wrestler on both shows by far. I mean, it's not even close right now. AJ?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Dean Ambrose, he just don't come off as a world champion to me. Maybe it's because they devalued the title with these split brands and getting another title that doesn't feel like the title's worth anything. So, I don't know. But he looks like a slob, let's be honest. Sat there in blue jeans and a wife beater for like 3 years. Come on.
He's been butthurt ever since the Stone Cold interview.
I haven't got to see any of it, but from everything I'm hearing, he's just not killing it like he was. So I don't know what the deal is.
It's just a character. Yeah,
they'll put on AJ here. They'll do another match next month for the next show or something, you know, going ahead and put it on him. Dean's time is coming and gone.
Sad.
Yeah.
It's funny though, if he ever left and ended up, oh God forbid, in TNA. Oof. Oh hey, check this out. I was just on my Twitter page. Breaking news. As of 24 minutes ago, the Bleacher Report at WWE and at Front Row Brian. Says Paige has reportedly quit WWE and has hired legal representation.
Uh-oh.
Well, it came out a day or two that she was looking at hiring legal representation. Now, as far as her quitting, that might be news or might be exaggeration, but that did come out a couple days ago about the. Like, what I'm excited for is because I will be at Shimmer in October.
Ooh,
and what I'm hoping for is, yeah, because at the last Shimmer taping. Nicole Matthews, another girl you're probably familiar with, was like saying she's the leader and she's better than all these other veterans and like, why isn't Soraya Knight here? And then she wrestled Soraya Knight's protege, Rhea O'Reilly, and she beat Rhea O'Reilly. So I'm hoping Soraya will come, want to get revenge, beat Nicole, that'll babyface her, and then they could give her, because it's a big win, they could give her the title match against Mercedes Martinez. But before that match, Rhea comes out and has a match with either Nicole Savoy or the one that became the MMA fighter. God damn it, I can't think of her name. Rhonda's friend.
Oh,
so anyway, she wrestles one of them. They decide to jump on her, the two of them. They beat the shit out of her. Soraya comes out to make the save. They take out Soraya's leg. They beat her down. So when the main event comes, you get Mercedes in her match. They start to introduce Soraya, play her music. She doesn't come out. They play her music again. She doesn't come out. They say she comes out now or there's no match. Her music doesn't hit. Paige's old Shimmer music hits. Paige comes out and wins the Shimmer world title. That'd be awesome.
Brainzak,
I'm always just thinking about it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Dave's listening, so I'm sure he's stealing my idea, just like the WWE stole my idea for the invasion and everything else, and I ain't going to get no damn
money.
Like
WWE stole the money and the bank
idea. Screwed over.
Oh, my
goodness.
I want my 10%, Dave, when you do this.
Just give him free
tickets
now. Shut up.
But anyway, we've hit our hour, and Craig has to go do something. I have
yes,
no
I do.
Hey, Ed, did you want to talk about a couple of shows?
Oh, yeah, we can let Craig go, and we can talk about Narcos.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. All right, see you guys.
Have you seen Narcos, Craig?
Don't even know what it is.
Oh, we'll look into it.
It's on Netflix.
Okay, yes, I'll Google Narcos and see if I can get some, whatever that is. I'm sure this will go well.
Okay.
See you guys.
All right. Yeah, I pretty much watched all the Narcos, and I can't say one day because I watched like two episodes before I went and did the paper out, and then I came home and I finished it basically.
Yeah, and, I couldn't. I got it about three episodes in. Like it was on, I think it was like Saturday, last Saturday or something, and I just there wasn't nothing else for me the rest of the day. I just couldn't stop watching it. You know, that fucking show. I thought that was better than the first season. So.
You really?
Yeah.
I thought the first season was better because more shit happened in the first season. They had to throw in a lot of filler on the second season as far as making it a love story with his wife and a few other. They had to drag it out to make it a whole season because, you know, they covered the majority of it on the first season. So there really wasn't too much.
Like, I guess this was like the time period was like a year from when he got out of prison, from when he was killed. So
yeah,
because I looked it up because I was curious about what the timeline was and stuff like that. I was wondering what they were going to do at the end because I couldn't remember when he died, but I was going and looked it up to see how this season was going to be. You know, they got it for two more seasons now.
Yeah, they just announced 3 and 4, so I guess they're going to go after the. It's going to be
Cartel.
Yeah, it's going to be the Cali Cartel, and it's I don't know if the white guy is going to be in it, but for sure the way they set it up, it's the Martell from Games of Thrones. What's his name?
Yeah.
Obrium. What the fuck was
one
that
got his face mushed in?
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be cool that they're keeping it going, and
it
kind of works because I mean
the way that you know, the Pablo's not in it anymore because he was a big thing to me, at least.
Yeah. But at least with the name, at least it was the name Pablo or Escobar as Narcos. So it's like you can actually, you know what I mean? You can kind of continue because then the name covers basically whoever's being the drug dealer at the time.
What?
So that'll be cool. I mean, it's cool because it is a really good show. I really loved how, because, you know, one of the things they do that's real cool is they splice in all the original news footage and photos into the movie.
Yeah,
so I loved
like,
how they showed the original photo of them standing over the dead Escobar, and then they showed the movie characters standing over them kind of
like
the same way.
Like, they'll talk about a news report, and then you see the actual real news report that happened at the time with the real photos of everyone. But yeah, I think that's cool. Only thing I didn't like, and this is just a little nitpick, is I didn't like all the Spanish subtitles just because I'm one of those that watches TV and is like doing like a couple other things at the same time. So
no, and that's so you're racist against Mexican.
No, it isn't. I'm always doing something on my computer or my Kindle or something at the same time and instead of pay attention to the show.
That's one thing you do got to pay attention because there is a lot of subtitles. It's funny though because my mom had come over too while I was watching one of them and because he didn't have a proper accent, she just walks by and she's like, is he supposed to be speaking Spanish? Because his Spanish sucks. I was like, actor. You don't have... And then his daughter spoke in and she's like, his daughter speaks good Spanish. Why didn't he speak good Spanish?
I didn't like at the end when the taxi driver, when he killed the hot chick. I didn't like that.
I know, because that was like, what was the point of everything? If she's still going to die and then he's the one, you know, he saves her. He looked like he saved her, and then he goes and he killed her.
Yeah, I just felt that was kind of stupid.
Yeah.
It just seemed like that was one of those things that seemed like it was one of those fictional things they made up for the show, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, yeah, talk about a show that made me never want to go to Columbia. Jesus Christ. I mean, that's just crazy. Knowing that shit, more that, like, but all that shit is true. I mean, that's some crazy shit back then. I mean, he was like one of the richest men in the world. It's like amazing. Kind of fascinating.
What's funny is all the fucking, like, because they, you know, they had to dramatize it for the TV show, right?
Yeah.
But all the shit they dramatized is the fucking, like, love story shit. You know what I mean? Because all the main shit that happened fucking was real.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it's amazing that you know, it's like I think the news lady getting killed was made up when she got killed near the end of the season when she was in the van and she and her whole crew was killed. I think that was made up because there was something after he was dead, like, because I was watching a documentary or something on his death on YouTube, and I think that the news lady was still alive, so I think they kind of made that up, but still, all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then they did such a good job of making the characters, the actors, look like the real characters to the point where there's a lot of other documentaries on Netflix about it. Like, there's one where it's basically they get his son, and his son meets with some of the politicians' children that he had killed or was, like, at war with. And the son in his documentary looks exactly the way the kid from the TV show would look 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's amazing how they did all that.
Well, the thing was, I was watching the documentary called Killing Pablo. Type it into YouTube. It's like an hour and a half. It's pretty good. And like at the end when he died, it was not. He was on the phone with his son, like that whole time. It wasn't the wife. Like when they found him. So, because he was talking to his son, trying to get like certain things about his story out and stuff like that. You know, try to get his family out of the Columbia and stuff like that.
Well, they had to make it the wife on the TV show because they pushed the, you know, they had to make it last the 10 episodes. They had to push the love story. The second season was more of a love story than anything, it seemed like to me.
The whole fault of them being on the run like that was the fault of his mom because she had to go to fucking church and he got followed.
Yeah. I was almost expecting him to kill the mom after that happened.
Well, the guy that took him, I knew they were going to kill him, but he got killed when those Pepes followed him up there, so, you know.
Yeah.
That show was one of the best. That shit fucking crazy. Especially more crazy than it was real. You know, they just killed politicians and cops left and right. They didn't give a shit back then. Right?
Yeah.
And they kind of play him up as like a sympathetic character, if you think about it.
Yeah, kind of.
And he comes off. And like when he's with his family or, you know, with some of the people that work for him, it comes off as like a nice guy, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like when they went and got the money and then people recognize him and he's like, but then part of it is that he knows that he has to kind of play it up like that. So he's like, no, let them see me. And then he starts giving them all money and stuff.
Yeah. They also got another miniseries on there. Got like 80 episodes, and each one's an hour. Have you seen that?
Which one?
They got another Pablo Escobar like miniseries up there that is like last 80 episodes. It's like 80 hours.
You know, when it's getting ready to switch to the next one, they have like the advertisement for something else. I couldn't tell if that was for a TV show or a documentary. So maybe I guess
it's a miniseries. I guess they did in like Columbia or something, and it's just a dramatization, like from when he was a kid until he dies, like 80 episodes long.
Oh, wow.
I started watching that. So. I watched Stranger Things, too. That was really good.
Yeah, that was actually pretty awesome. 11, and I I can't think of his name, but the kid with no teeth, the hurt him and 11 were fucking awesome.
Yeah. One of those weird ones that you can kind of see, not, you can kind of get to understand, you know, it's like the government experiment or something like that, you know, but it still does very good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the next season. So it takes place in the 80s, so they have awesome music. So.
The only slightly negative is the Winona Ryder's voice. Her voice is kind of annoying in it. But as far as like everything else, I mean, it was really good. I mean, it was really well acted. I think that's one thing that helped, because it's that kind of a cheesy story or whatever, but the acting and the chemistry between everybody just made it work. I think that's like the acting and the chemistry with everybody is what really put it over the top as being really good.
Yeah.
And they signed that for another season, so hopefully that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, totally. They brought like a little trailer out that showed all the names of all the episodes or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it takes place maybe a year or two after this happened.
Yeah.
They got to bring 11 back somehow, I think.
Well, they're trying to tease that she's not coming back, but you know that's like the big mystery, the big tease to keep you interested while they're making it.
Mm-hmm.
I figure she has to come back because when the cop went and left her the food out in the woods at the end, like you specifically see him leaving the Diego's in the box. So she has to come back. They're going to try and make it seem like she's not, but she will be. Did you see her on Jimmy Fallon?
No.
Well, they had her and they didn't have all the kids because they didn't have the one that was missing, but they had the one with no teeth and the black one, and then the one that was in love with 11 and 11. They were on Jimmy Fallon, and they're all sitting there and they're playing a game where they're going to give a fact about one of the characters, and they had to pick, and the way they picked is they had like a kind of silly spring, so they'd spray whoever they thought was the person. And one of the questions was like, this person can rap Nicki Minaj or whatever the fuck her name is, rap song. So they figured they knew it was her, so they sprayed her, and then she fucking gets up and she starts fucking rapping. Fucking all badass. Sounds just like Nicki Minaj or whatever the fuck her name is. And was actually pretty talented and shit.
If I feel bad for the other son, Winona Ryder's character, the oldest son. He goes through all that, and then the other asshole still gets the girl at the end.
Oh, I know. That was kind of fucked up. At least he beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
She was a little hottie, too. But yeah, that was pretty good. That was surprisingly good.
They got another one of these Hardy matches there tonight. We ought to review that next week.
They got what?
Another one of those Hardy things. The delete or decay is kind of like the final deletion
thing.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll wait and watch it when somebody takes Brian and Vinny's commentary and puts it over the video. That's about the only way I'll watch it.
I just saw the clip of Jeff getting ready to spar with a kangaroo, and I was like, this is going to be awesome. And kangaroo is all jacked up. He's got bigger muscles than Jeff and Matt combined. And shit. Yeah, that should be pretty cool. But I guess we can go ahead and...
Okay.
No, not really. So we'll go ahead and wrap up, and then we'll talk about watching CM Punk get his ass whipped next week.
All right.
Hopefully this WWE pay-per-view won't suck too bad. So we'll talk to everybody next week.
To be the man! You gotta beat the man!
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the matrix shit! Let's go hook him up!
I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out. The
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.